I want to bring you up to date, too, on the aerial herbicide issue, just in general, because there was a piece that moved on the wires this morning. It reads from AP as follows. Two state agencies are investigating aerial spraying on private timberlands in the Southern Oregon Coast Range. There, a member of the spraying crew says he had to regularly take shelter from herbicides sprayed from a helicopter. The truck driver told officials and the Oregonian that he went to a hospital complaining of blisters in his mouth and a swollen throat. That story probably sounds very familiar to our next guest. Catherine Rickard is one of dozens of people who reported getting sprayed by an aerial application of herbicides in the Cedar Valley area near Gold Beach in the fall of 2013. She testified at the legislature yesterday and joins us now on the Jefferson Exchange. Catherine, welcome.
Thank you.
And let me just let our listeners know, we will delay the Writer's Almanac till the back end of the hour, so it will air for sure. Catherine, tell us about the place you live and the forests around and how close you are to forested slopes, that sort of thing.
Well, I live about, as the crow flies, only about 4 miles from the ocean, but to drive to my home is about 9 miles. And we have, we live in an actual valley, so we have a big mountain range in front of us, butting up against the ocean, and then a big mountain behind us, which has hundreds and hundreds of acres. Over the top of the ridge is privately owned timberland. On the opposite ridge is also privately owned timberland. And they're patchwork. It's like a patchwork quilt, you know. So some of the ranges could be, some of the timber could be anywhere from 25 acres to 90 acres of private timberland that is surrounding this community that's through the valley. We do have fish-bearing stream that runs directly through that valley, and it is illegal to actually spray across that, which actually did happen.
I mean, the spray was kept open as a helicopter crossed the stream?
What they did is they went from one ridge and flew across the valley, across homes, and the fish-bearing stream, releasing their product.
And granted, you can't read the minds of anybody, but in a subsequent investigation, did you find out whether that was an intentional thing? It sounds like just in terms of not wanting to waste herbicide, you probably wouldn't want to do that.
The cost of herbicide, no, they would not want to do that. You wouldn't think so. Mechanical error, that was ruled out. So I'm unsure of exactly what was in his mind or what he was doing. Maybe he was overloaded and had to release some. You know, at this point, it's speculation as to what he was actually thinking or doing.
So how long have you lived in Cedar Valley, and were you aware of the issue with spraying on adjacent timberlands when you moved there? Was that the kind of thing you got an education about through living there?
Well, it's interesting. I'm a logger's daughter, and, you know, I heard through the grapevine of some aerial spraying, but I'd never witnessed it myself or experienced it. I've lived in Cedar Valley itself for the past 8 years. I've lived in Gold Beach for 12. And until this actually happened to me, I was unaware that it was happening around me. You can imagine the shock. I mean, the interesting thing is we have helicopters that go through there often, so they're looking for marijuana at that point. So most of the residents around there, you hear a helicopter, you don't think much of it, or you hear the Coast Guard helicopter who's on search and rescue missions or, you know, flight simulations, and so you kind of get used to having helicopters around, but until this happens, now everybody is afraid of the helicopter sound. So we all run out to find out, okay, who's flying? What's going on now? it's really changed the perspective of everyone in that valley, and we all now stay in close contact. So if somebody hears it on the other end of the valley, they're calling the network, and we're wanting to know what's going on and where they're at and where they're going.
Sounds like a lot of binoculars and cell phones at the ready.
Oh, yes, and cameras.
So I'm glad you brought up the fact that you're a logger's daughter, because in case anybody thinks you're coming at this from an anti-timber industry viewpoint, that is not necessarily the starting point by a long shot.
Oh, no. I was born and raised Roseburg, Oregon. My dad ran his own logging company. It was a small operation, no more than about 20 people who worked. I worked out there alongside them, setting chokers and digging fire trail, bucking logs. So I know exactly what goes on. It's a very difficult job for anyone to do. It's a very necessary job. I mean, that's what fed me and clothed me and put a roof over my head. and I have nothing but respect for the loggers, but it's really not the loggers' issue. What the issue is the timber owners and the chemical companies who want to keep doing what they're doing without paying attention to the harm that they're doing to the people that live around those areas. The loggers themselves don't have anything to do with it. So it's not really a logging issue, at least to me.
Not the issues of the folks on the ground actually doing the work, you're saying?
No, it's not their deal. And they're not being protected either. I mean, just recently in Douglas County, 11 loggers were directly sprayed while they were on the job. I mean, how does that happen?
Is this the story that we were just talking about from The Wire this morning?
No, this is another issue.
Catherine Rickards, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the aerial application of herbicides and her interest in the issue because she has experienced those from underneath in her home in Cedar Valley near Gold Beach, one of many people, dozens of people who complained about sprays, particularly one in October of 2013. We'll get to the specifics in a moment. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about aerial herbicide applications and the regulation thereof. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. And our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So take us back to October of 2013, Catherine. What happened that day?
Well, it was interesting because I was sitting at my computer upstairs. I had just started college, and I heard the helicopter, and it was flying extremely low. My windows were rattling, and I thought, gosh, that's flying really low, but I really thought they were just looking for marijuana. But after about the second or third pass, I got very curious, and I stepped out, and immediately I was assaulted with a horrible, horrible smell. My sinuses were burning. My eyes were burning. I got a rash all over my arms. I felt sick to my stomach. I didn't feel like I was standing right. My equilibrium was a little bit off. So I stepped back in, and it just progressed to get worse and worse and worse. And I didn't attribute it to the helicopter until the next day when all the neighbors started talking about it. My husband came home about a half an hour later. He stayed outside and worked for a little bit, and by the time he got in a half an hour later, he was sick. We started comparing notes. We felt exactly the same way. He was experiencing the same conditions. And then we started noticing the animals, because I didn't even think about the animals being outside at the time. Brought them in, and they were lethargic. They were vomiting, and, we were just very, very confused. I did my remedies that I normally do for the pets, on nausea and things like that, thinking, well, they just must have ate something bad or something like that. But eventually, my Rhodesian Ridgeback lab, I wound up having to have hospitalized. And because of this spray, he had eaten grass and licked his paws and gotten all that chemical inside of him. It killed all the villi in his stomach, and he couldn't process his food. Now, the vet told me she couldn't conclusively say that it was from the spray, but she said it was most likely from the spray because she did believe he had been poisoned. He managed to survive until May 20th of 2014. I would have put him down sooner to take samples, but, I mean, he was our family. He was our friend, and he just had such a will to live. He just kept trying to keep going, and so we elected not to go that route. It was a very difficult time watching him go through that. And then for my husband and myself, just trying to get health care when nobody knows what we're sprayed with. I mean, it took 6 months before they even told us what we were sprayed with. It took them 7 days to even come down and take any samples. And I specifically offered them urine, blood, water. I offered them soil samples. I even told them to take samples of my Trek deck, which is where I got my contact dermatitis. They said that wasn't a good source. And I said, well, then swab it. They said that wasn't a good source, and that's out of our range of scope that we don't do that. Only to find out in the Senate hearing, the first Senate hearing I'm listening to them, they're telling the senators and the representatives, oh, we take water, we take blood, we take all these samples. They didn't take any of that from us. They took from three plants. That was it.
So who did you contact first? And was it you or was it somebody else in Cedar Valley? I mean, did you coordinate the response to calling whoever could be in a responsible position to do something?
Well, the first person to call was my neighbor. He called immediately to the agriculture department. I went the very next day to our health department. Our health department told us that they couldn't do anything for us. In the meantime, several other neighbors had tried the health department. Several had called the police department. Then they went to, we were all referred to the agriculture department. I finally got a hold of the agriculture department on Friday. And Mike Odenthal says, I've not heard anything about this. Catherine, let me look into it, and I'll call you Monday at about 4 o'clock. So by this time, it's gone from Wednesday. I'm calling on Friday, and there's been several people that have called in between, and he's telling me he knows nothing about it, to now I'm not going to hear anything till Monday at 4 o'clock. And when he calls me at 4 o'clock, he says, well, you know, I've heard from a couple of people. I don't understand, you know, there was not supposed to be any spray operation around you, but we'll send down a team on Wednesday. Well, you know, this is October. Lots of rain, lots of rain, lots of rain. So a lot of the evidence would have been washed into the ground. Fine, take soil samples. Nope, not an option.
So if the information doesn't come to you as a landowner and a resident of the area where spraying is going on, does it at least get to the Oregon Department of Agriculture? I mean, if there's no notification other than sometime in the next year you'll be spraying, does at least the ODA have to be notified of specific spraying incidents?
My understanding of how it works is that the timber owners file with the ODF that there's an intended spray, and they have a six-month window.
Right, that's the Forestry Department, sure.
Okay, Forestry Department. They, in turn, alert the Agriculture Department. In our case, they did have a legal one side, because there's two separate timber owners using the same helicopter pilot during this particular one. So they did have a notification with the Agriculture Department on one side, but on the other, it was an outdated one from April.
All right. So no particular information up front. And then, so you described the response from the Oregon Department of Agriculture, which was slow. And I understand from reading some of the articles in the Oregonian over the past few months, more than a year, in fact, now, that they actually have not kept very good records on even getting contact from people in Cedar Valley.
No, they have not. In fact, we wound up petitioning the federal EPA, and not until we went to the Oregon State Attorney General did we get any help from the Oregon Department of Agriculture. Their exact quotes were, we had to keep this secret because it was an ongoing investigation.
And your reaction to that was what?
My reaction to that is, what about my health? What about my neighbor's health? I can't get adequate health care because you're withholding information. I think that whole entire agriculture department needs to be reviewed. I think it's not just the alerting system, because they don't always take people who call in. They don't say, are you filing a complaint? They just take information, and they can investigate what they choose to investigate at this point. So they've told me that there's many times they've had complaints that they've never even gone out on to see if there's even a problem. So honestly, the entire system has a problem.
And again, we did offer to talk to the Oregon Department of Agriculture, not directly about this, but just about the fact that there is a new online pesticide complaint intake feature on its website. ODA canceled that interview. We'll come back and talk more with Catherine Rickard about the overspray in Cedar Valley in October 2013 and her experience at the legislature yesterday. And you can join us back on The Exchange with Catherine Rickard and you in a minute 10. .836 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. You can find us online at jeffexchange.org, part of ijpr.org, just new and improved as of yesterday. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at Jeff Exchange. And, of course, you can take part in our conversations as they happen. We are in the midst of a conversation about aerial herbicide applications in Oregon used frequently by the timber industry to make sure that the plants that can compete with timber seedlings don't survive as well as the seedlings do. There are issues with the regulation of the aerial spraying, particularly with the folks in Cedar Valley, east of Gold Beach, who got sprayed upon in October of 2013, now well documented by the Oregon Department of Agriculture, but in the opinion of today's guest, somewhat late. Catherine Rickard is a resident of Cedar Valley and experienced that full bore. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the issues involved here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. I probably asked this question three times now, but I want to be really clear on what kind of notice, if any, is required before spraying happens to the residents of an area where they would be spraying nearby.
There is no actual notice that they have to provide for any person. That's not a law for them to have to notify anybody. That is one of the things that we're trying to get changed. You can sign up for a $35 fee of a possible impending spray around your location, but as several of my local residents have found, a lot of times you're not notified till 2 weeks after the incident.
Who does the $35 fee go to?
ODF.
The Department of Forestry. Is this part of the issue, do you think, that you have the Department of Forestry doing some of the regulation on the timberlands themselves, but the Department of Agriculture being in charge of pesticides and herbicides?
I find that, you know, I have to tell you, walking through this, I have become very jaded in my view. I've never experienced government, and I've never had to walk through the maze that this has become. And I am astounded at the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. I'm astounded at that, like the Oregon Department of Agriculture is on a two-edged sword. So they're supposed to investigate pesticides, but they are also supposed to promote timber and agriculture. And ODF is supposed to promote forestry. So, of course, they're not going to want to have these things come out. So I'm having a hard time with your question because I just believe that they're more towards protecting what they're supposed to be promoting rather than protecting the people that they are assigned to protect.
And so the response, finally, you got people to pay attention, and it was confirmed that there was a spray in October of 2013, and there were some sanctions to the pilot. Is that correct?
There were some sanctions. He was fined $10,000 personally and by his business, and he was supposed to have a suspended license for a year. However, that's not happened. He is in an appeal process. He is still flying. He has not paid one dime. In fact, if you were to research, many of these fines never get paid because there's no time limit for them to pay them. And several companies have had sanctions against them and have never paid their fines. I'm skeptical that he's actually going to get fined and lose his license. And that's one of the things in this bill that they sat there and said, well, we're going to increase fines. Well, that's fine and dandy. You're going to increase fines. But if you don't enforce what you're supposed to be enforcing and make them pay those fines and the sanctions, what good does raising the cost of a fine? It's like, where are you going with this? So it just doesn't make sense. I mean, if I get a ticket from speeding, I have a certain amount of time to get into the courthouse and get that paid, correct? So why is it not the same with the helicopter pilots who are being sanctioned?
The helicopter pilots are working as contractors for the timber companies, I'm assuming. And so what response have you gotten from the timber companies, if any?
They have not spoken to us.
Really?
No, they do not want to speak to us.
We have some contacts here from listeners. Bruce in Ashland writes, being sprayed on is a form of trespass. One can file a toxic tort in civil court. One can also physically try to stop the spraying under imminent danger, lesser of evils law. Our exposure to these chemicals has resulted in cancer and immune diseases that similar companies who make the chemicals then also make pharmaceuticals to medically maintain the harmed person. They get paid on both ends, so they do not want change. Has there been any effort to file lawsuits, as Bruce suggests, or torts?
I can tell you we filed a lawsuit in Curry County regarding the Right to Farm and Timber Act, because it is an immunity law that the timber owners and the helicopter pilots can hide under. I can tell you that we have filed a tort claim at this point, and we're waiting for a response on whether they're going to pull out the Right to Farm and Timber Act to block it.
That's interesting, because we've been talking about GMO agriculture this week as well, and that is also being argued under the Right to Farm Act in both directions.
Right. So, like, the Right to Farm and Timber Act puts the burden on the victim that has to prove that this illegal act actually occurred and that you are either dead, dying, or commercially hurt.
We have another email here from Boyd in Wolf Creek, who says, aerial herbicide drift is a well-documented problem on federal lands. The federal ban is still in place. He says significant drift occurs with winds less than 2 miles per hour. I was surprised to read about this myself, that sometimes, in fact, the specific directions from pesticide or herbicide manufacturers, I understand, is to not do it when the winds are still.
That is true. That's some of it. But you also have to think about how they've labeled it is used on flat land. Usually an agriculture area. So if you go into Gold Beach, that's not a flat area, and we have a totally different weather pattern there. And our wind speeds are easily 25 to 30 mile an hour gusts with a steady wind of 10 to 25 miles an hour. So, you know, it's a totally different terrain. So they've got the same spray conditions or spray options, how they're supposed to spray it is how I'm trying to say it, sorry. But it's for two different types of areas, two totally different ecosystems.
So you're challenging the very notion of the use in that particular terrain.
I am.
Any word, Catherine Rickard, on changes at the Ag Department because of what happened in Cedar Valley?
Well, in this bill, they're going to allocate $2 million to add on more government instead of fixing what they've already got. Instead of having the Oregon Health Authority have the authority to actually investigate the health side, which would alleviate the agriculture's problem trying to straddle how to help people, okay, because they are not doctors. They don't know how to help people. They're going to add on more people to investigate. Well, you know, I don't know if that's necessary. I don't know if that is actually necessary if they're actually doing their job in the first place.
What powers does the Oregon Health Authority have at this point to investigate? You mentioned that the Curry County Health Department had no particular jurisdiction, they said.
They have none.
OHA has none either.
Has none.
Wow. Tell us about the hearing yesterday. Set the scene for us and what you did testify there, correct?
I did testify, and, you know, being a somebody who is not pretty savvy in that arena, it can be a little bit intimidating. I felt that there was several untruths that were spoken while we were sitting there waiting our turn. I felt that several people were very interested in what the Oregonians for Food and Shelter and timber industry was trying to say, but when my group got up to speak, I noticed, and I felt very offended, and I mentioned this to Representative Langinger, that as we're speaking, they're reading on their computers or they're shuffling papers or whispering between themselves. It's not everyone was doing that, but a few were. And in fact, the vice president of the actual vice chair
of the committee
actually got up and left when we got ready to speak. And so I found that very offensive, since I only had 3 minutes to speak, and I drove 5 hours just to get there, and I'm going to have to drive 5 hours back and pay for a hotel room, and you're going to walk out on me when I have 3 minutes. I just felt that they really didn't want to hear what I had to say, and so it was a little bit offensive. And I do have to tell you, it wasn't all of them, and I do have to really compliment Representative Langinger and Senator Dembrow that they have worked so hard on these bills, and they understand the issue. And, you know, they're getting a lot of pressure from timber and chemical companies and from their own legislators. So I got to give them hats off.
So Senator Dembro and Representative Leininger are both from the greater Portland area. I have to believe you've tried to make some contact with the senator and representative who serve Curry County. What kind of responses have you gotten?
That would be Senator Cruz and Representative Krieger. And what they would tell you is, oh, yes, we're very concerned with this. And, you know, we don't do aerial spraying. We do hack and squirt and so on and so forth, because they, one is agriculture and one is a timber. But to be perfectly honest, and they do not, they're not for what we're doing. I mean, they are very for timber. They've flat out told me even this 3549, they're not in favor of it.
As I read House Bill 3549, and there's been, as Representative Leininger mentioned earlier in the hour, there have been several bills that have come up this session. 3549 seems to be the one that is still alive in the legislature, but it looks like it's simply sort of a let's look at the rules kind of bill, like let's study this rather than any real changes in regulations.
Exactly. It's a pacifist type of bill is what I think. They're just trying to make everybody go away and make them feel like they're doing something. If they had actually wanted to do something, SB 613 would have been the best bill. But because it made changes and because the timber and chemical companies did not want that much change, it died in the House. It didn't even get a hearing in the floor. So this is just, for me, this is just a bill that is, I mean, there's some good things about it. Yes, education for the flight people to, you know, continually learn. Increasing the fines if they actually enforce those fines. I mean, there's certain things to the bill that are, I think, okay. I don't agree with the study. They already know we need a buffer zone. There's none around schools. There's none around homes. And it's only around fish-bearing streams. They can still spray over every tributary. And where do you think that water goes? Right into fish-bearing streams, right into our ocean. It's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. So
let me underscore what you were just saying, because this is actually reading off the fact sheet called Facts About Herbicide Use in Oregon's Forests. This is put out by the Oregon Department of Forestry. Final bullet point is, currently there are no regulations in Oregon requiring a buffer zone for aerial application of herbicides near specific structures or facilities, including schools. Both EPA label and state pesticide control law requirements are designed to protect human health during ground and aerial application of pesticides. But this is the ODF admitting, hey, there's nothing that says you can't spray it right over a school or a home.
Correct. Correct. That's absolutely correct. And now they're wanting to put 60 feet. Now, yes, it's a small victory. It is a small victory that we at least got them to do something. But think about 60 feet. Your kids are in school. The grounds end 10 feet from the playground, and they can spray 60 feet from that. Do you really want your children exposed to that? Do you really want your own self to be exposed to that? Because these are endocrine disruptors. These shut down your immunity system. This causes birth defects.
Is it atrazine they're using up there?
Atrazine was not used in on our property. What was used on us was 2,4-D ester and triclopyr. And the interesting thing about that, when you 2,4-D is never supposed to be mixed with chlorine. But triclopyr, that is one of their main ingredients. And when you mix it, it causes severe respiratory disorders. And that's why some of our people are coughing up blood out of their lungs, burned lungs. That's why it was so toxic to the throat and the sinuses. So, you know, they're mixing chemicals that they don't even know what is going to happen. And as they spray more and more, our weeds are learning. Our weeds are learning to be able to resist. So they're having to make more and more toxic mixes to be able to kill those weeds.
We have an email here from Mike in Medford. He says, hello, your problem, like that of the GMO activists, is you don't play the political game. Whether you want to or not, donating campaign money to your representatives is how you get them to work. If you don't, the industry will continue the standard. What do you think about trying to get more involved in the political game?
I have actually had people approach me about jumping into the political ring.
Yourself?
Myself. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm not cut out for that. I call a spade a spade. And I do not know how to play that game, although I'm learning. And I shouldn't have to. I should not have to. And, you know, campaign dollars, honestly, should not make a difference, because I actually pay their paycheck, and so do you. and they should be listening to the people paying their paycheck rather than who's giving them a bribe on the side.
What do you think will happen? First of all, let me go back to the hearing yesterday. You mentioned some lack of attention from some members of the committee. Did anybody ask you any questions, or was it just a three-minute statement and you were done?
Three-minute statement, and I was done.
How much hope do you hold out? Representative Lanier thinks there'll be something passed, but how do you feel about that, Catherine?
I believe they're going to pass it because they want to pacify us. They're hoping that if they pass something, we'll just go away. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. I mean, I do see something passing, but I'm not done. 60 feet is not enough. Being able to spray across your tributaries or standing water is not enough. I have a spring. My spring got sprayed. I couldn't drink my water for over 8 months. I still don't know if it's actually that safe, but what am I going to do?
So, you're going to keep trying, clearly.
I'm going to keep fighting because it's not just me. This is happening all over the state. We just had two incidences in the last month and a half in Roseburg. Both of them, one was a helicopter crew pilot and the other set was loggers on the ground. Then you have Triangle Lake, who had 100% of atrazine in their urine, and they had no recourse because of the immunity law.
It is an ongoing story that we will be covering again. Catherine Rickard experienced overspray near Gold Beach in October of 2013. She spoke to the legislature yesterday. Catherine, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.